After a full-throttle brain bleed at the age of 25, Ashok Rajamani, a first-generation Indian American, had to relearn everything. How to eat, how to walk, and to speak, even things as basic as his sexual orientation. With humor and insight, he describes the events of that day. His brain exploded, for want of a better term, just before his brother's wedding, as well as the long, difficult recovery period. And he has lived to tell the story is, quite frankly, a miracle. More than a decade later, he has finally reestablished a productive artistic life for himself, still dealing with the effects of his injury, lifelong half-blindness, as well as epilepsy. But forging ahead as a survivor dedicated to helping others who have suffered a similar catastrophe. Again, the name of the book is The Day My Brain Exploded, A True Story. Ashok Rajamani, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It is. It's wonderful to have you here. When you think about this and realizing that you've been living with this now for more than a decade, does it still? I assume your life is, and maybe not, but it seems like your life would be divided into before this happened and after this happened.
Yeah, actually, I do feel that there was a death of Ashok One, and that's in my book as well. So I used to call him Ashok 1.0, and now this is Ashok 2.0. And I think a lot of people that do have brain hemorrhages and brain injuries become a different person, and that old person does indeed die.
Let us talk a little bit about what happened when we talk about the hemorrhage. I mean, you use the very graphic term for the title of the book and as well as in the book, but the day my brain exploded. But that's pretty much what happened, right?
It's absolutely what happened.
So what is the physically what was going on in your brain?
Okay, do you want the risque version of how it started or just to let you know how it happened? Because if you read it, you know it was kind of...
Well, yeah. No, I want to know... yeah, okay.
I don't know if your audience... Okay. Yeah, well, basically, I was at my brother's wedding in 2000, and it was in a hotel, and in my hotel room, I was rather bored, so I decided to masturbate. When I orgasmed, my head hurt, but it didn't feel like a normal orgasm. It felt like something was definitely wrong, and I felt I was dying. And it felt like Hiroshima was in my skull. I felt an atomic bomb so severe. I knew at that point that I was probably dying. So with my one finger working, I pressed zero, and my brother comes in his tuxedo, and I'm sure my sister-in-law was getting ready in her wedding dress, and they took me to the hospital next door, and it turned out that the orgasm had hit what's called an AVM, or arteriovenous malformation, which is a birth defect people are born with. 1% of the population is born with. And it's a little tangle inside your brain that eventually explodes if it's not found or detected earlier. In my case, it had never been detected, so it did explode at that moment. And then from then on, I was in the hospital, and there goes my journey from then on.
When you were in the hospital, and you write about this, it takes a long, and I think anyone who has had a hospital stay and or you know something traumatic happening to them knows this, but you know that sense of, well, what the hell just happened to me, and how do I, you know, I mean, I guess of course there's that live and die, but there's also that just, well, what happened and what's going to happen next, which are question marks that really don't have immediate answers, do they?
No, absolutely, especially when it comes to brain injury. What was odd was that, and I heard that's actually quite common, that 10 to 15 minutes after my explosion, I was rather lucid, so I was able to tell the doctors what had happened and what was going on in my head. But however, after like 15 minutes is when I became somewhat comatose in a way that I was unconscious. And then throughout my extended stay, it took about 3 months for the blood, which had become a sort of waterfall in my system going all over the place because of the hemorrhage, it took around 3 months for it to clot. And then once it clotted, they were able to drill open my skull and scoop out the actual bomb and portions of my brain in which it was hidden. And once that was scooped out, they were able to put my skull back in and screw it back in with frames made of titanium. But during my 3 months, I remember it was on and off. It was moments of lucidity, but then moments of severe unconsciousness. And however, there was pain throughout. There was a sort of, I thought it was a torture device, but it was really used to, you know, be a vent for my body. There were these things called ventriculostomies, which were these tubes that were drilled into the bone of my skull, which were, I guess, being a vent for the blood or for whatever the case was. Now, during the stay, it was also found out that I had 2 bouts of meningitis, which itself was dangerous enough. And basically a lot of other stuff that I didn't know, such as hematomas and things like that. But I think what the doctors had told my mom and my brother was to keep talking to him, because if you wanted him to stay conscious, if you wanted him to stay somewhat active in his mind, you have to keep speaking to him, which is what I think a lot of brain injury patients are told to with their loved ones. Always talk to them in order to keep them somewhat awake. Otherwise, they would, you know, go off to hell, which is what was happening on many occasions.
You suffer, and I mentioned this briefly in the introduction, but you suffer from blindness, which is on basically the left side of each eye, correct?
Yeah, it's a condition called hemianopsia, homonymous hemianopsia, and it is a very, very strange eye condition that you're half blind in both eyes. But the problem is there's no demarcation, there's no black line to tell you when you don't where the world ends. So what you see, you think is the entire world, but it's not. It's only half. So, you know, you hit walls, you can hit people. Funny stuff that happened to me is that I enter the women's bathroom a lot, public bathroom, because I can't see the W and O, and all I could see is men. And then I enter, and I see a bunch of stalls, and I see no urinal, and I realize, oh, I'm not in the women's bathroom. I mean, not in the men's bathroom. But throughout this, the blindness is a very tricky thing to deal with, and it is permanent. So that's probably one of the biggest, worst consequences, as well as to discover I had epilepsy after the fact.
The epilepsy obviously is the other major thing here. And at what point in this, because I was surprised in reading of how long it takes before they label it as permanent. You know, this. Okay, some of this stuff is going to go away, but this is going to be permanent.
Yeah, I mean, both of them are going to be permanent. The vision loss has been permanent, and that's simply because the part that it exploded was the occipital lobe, the right occipital lobe, and once a lobe like that explodes, your vision is lost. I believe there is now research and scientific development, so that they can treat this, or at least learn a way to compensate, whether they add some sort of electric node inside your brain or something like that to inspire you to see better. In terms of the epilepsy, I was never even told that was a possibility for my brain hemorrhage. So when it happened 2 years after the fact, it was a horrible, horrible surprise. And when I had it, I had a seizure in the middle of New York City street in the wintertime, and I didn't even know it was going to happen. And they tell you when you first have your first seizure, oh, it's for 2 weeks to calm you down. Then the next 2 weeks, oh, it's another 2 weeks until finally they tell you it's going to be, you know, probably permanent. And all you can hope for is to find a sort of a drug that would control it.
How controlled is it for you?
Luckily, it's been really good in the last 4 years or so. I've not had an incident. What the problem with epilepsy is drugs, it's very a trial and error situation. You don't know what's going to work. And with the drugs, it has to be a complete cocktail. Some drugs you have to take 2 milligrams with another, you know, 10 milligrams, stuff like that. But what the doctors do is they give you medicine and they say, okay, if you have a seizure, then obviously this is not right. If you don't, then this is right. And so you have to keep doing that kind of stuff. Now, the problem with a lot of people with epilepsy have is what's called an aura, a smell of burning rubber or smell of metal or something horrific, and that's telling you your body is going to electrify at that moment and you're going to be sort of electric cord inside yourself, and you're going to start, you know, having a seizure at that moment. So that's very frightening, because it's such a strong smell that I get very much, I get fear. Like, if I'm walking past a restaurant that's throwing off its garbage and I smell something very strong, I get worried. I said, oh, you know, what's going to happen? But basically, it's a difficult condition, and I'm just glad I'm able to articulate it and I'm able to document it, because little children and little infants, I can only wonder what it must be like, because they can't speak about their pain with it. So it's a horrible condition.
You know, you talk about these primary instigators with the condition that you have of going to the bathroom and having sex and masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to do those things now in a fairly normal fashion?
I was very fearful for many months after it, obviously. But it was only later on I found out, too, that most brain injuries and brain hemorrhages and strokes are urogenitally based. So whether it's sexual act, whether it's going to the bathroom, women giving birth, for some reason there's a pure connection between that and the brain. So that often tends to happen. But yeah, it took me a while to finally beat my fear from it. I still have anxieties, but yeah, because it was a scary thing, obviously.
Well, I can't even imagine the first time doing either sex or masturbation of thinking, oh my God, you know, look what happened the last time.
Oh, absolutely. It was a nightmare. So, yeah, you get really worried about anything that, like, even the idea of going to a hotel. Or for instance, I can't go to D.C., which was where that the wedding was held at. I call it my Auschwitz. It's an area that it's so entrenched in terms of sorrow for me that I can't ever go back there.
Your sister and your brother, are they still together?
They're still together, and this was the funniest part, Joe, which is last night was my book launch, which is exciting. It was the book launch, the release. That same night, my sister-in-law, is giving birth to her second child right now as we speak in Virginia. So it's a very weird connection. So right now I'm giving birth to my book, and that my brother's having his second baby right now.
Wow.
I know. So my family wasn't there at the launch because they're all kind of in Virginia being there. But
they get a pass.
Yeah.
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 You had your moment in the sun, right? Ashok Rajamani's new book is The Day My Brain Exploded. It's a true story. It's published by Algonquin. Ashok, I thank you very much for being with us and sharing your story. It's quite a tale. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.